Imagine leaving for work in the morning and finding out a few hours later that your home and every possession within it has been swallowed by the earth. Sinkholes make this an actual possibility in this state. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. A massive sinkhole last month in Pasco County destroyed two houses and forced five more homes to be condemned. Luckily, no one was hurt, unlike the freak occurrence 4 years ago when a sinkhole in Sefner claimed a man's life, opening up under his bedroom as he slept at night. We know that Florida has more sinkholes than any other state. Are we living in a kind of sinkhole alley? How worried should we be about sinkholes? And what, if anything, can we do about them? Joining me in the studio is Kevin Guthrie, Assistant Pasco County Administrator for Public Safety, Dr. Lori Collins, Co-Director of the University of South Florida Libraries Digital Heritage and Humanities Collections, and from the studios of WFSU in Tallahassee, Dr. Chuck Nice, Assistant Professor of Risk Management and Insurance at Florida State University. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
Chuck Nice, let's put sinkhole risk in perspective if we can. If it happens to you, it can be catastrophic, but how great are the chances that it will happen? How does it compare with some other risks that we're familiar with, like hurricane risk?
Well, there's a big difference between sinkhole damage and something like a flood or a hurricane. And the biggest difference is the size of the event. Hurricanes, floods, they tend to affect a large number of properties at any given time. Sinkholes, you know, the example you started with, where it affects 5 to 7 houses, that's a large event. So it's a little bit different from what you think of in terms of a catastrophe. And it is something, though, that is very much location specific. You do live in Sinkhole Alley, the Tampa area, Hillsborough and Pasco counties and Hernando. That's where we see a majority of our sinkholes happening in the state of Florida. So the risk there is a lot different than, say, up here in Tallahassee.
So, Lori Collins, you create maps, 3D maps, historic maps. You look at data from years ago. You were sort of overlaying the maps of this area in Pasco and Land O'Lakes where the sinkhole happened. You found something interesting.
Yeah, so going all the way back to 1847, which was the first general land office survey in this area, we were able to see original sort of pre-development configuration of these lakes and then extend that all the way through to present where we have the modern development. We were able to see that Saxon Lake has changed tremendously and, in fact, was heavily dredged in the 1960s, late 50s, prior to the development. And that dredge material was actually placed on wetlands and land areas to actually increase the shoreline by about 30%. Why is that significant? That increase in land was used to create waterfront property, essentially, where this sinkhole actually is today.
So when you know something like that, it's not so shocking.
Well, yeah, and it's also, you know, a lot of people talk about predictability models for sinkholes and how it's almost impossible to do that. But I do think perhaps there are some things that we could do to really look at our landscapes today and really assess vulnerability and look for these areas that are likely to have problems. And if we can pull all that together, I think we have a much better chance of, you know, looking at these things before something happens.
Well, Kevin, I was going to ask you, why do sinkholes form? This one in Pasco filled with water. It was right near a lake. We just talked about that. But that's not always what happens.
No, it's not. You know, if you go back to the sinkhole that happened in Sefner.
Mm-hmm.
That was a dry sink. No water in it whatsoever.
The earth kind of opened up and bedroom fell in.
Right. And closed right back up. It's really strange how, you know, the original question that you asked me is, how do these things happen? And I started laughing a little bit. If I knew the answer to that question, I'd be a very rich man today. We respond to about one depression call about every 10 days in Pasco County. We go out, we have our standard protocols, what we do, but at the end of the day, we are not experts on this. We have no geotechnical engineers on staff. How do they happen? I don't know where they come from. I don't understand a whole lot about them. I just know that we respond to them, like I said, about once every 10 days.
Once every 10 days. That's more than we hear about.
Absolutely.
Chuck Nice, let's say I want to buy a house in Pasco County or any county in this area. What would I look for in order to avoid buying in a sinkhole-prone area?
There's a couple of things. One is that each of the counties keeps a record of sinkhole reports. So an insurance company, and I'll use Citizens as an example, as the state-run insurance company, when they receive a claim for a sinkhole loss, if they pay that claim, they are required by statute to report that to the county. So that would go to the Court of Clerks. Most of the counties, for example, Hillsborough, then take that information and they turn it over to the property appraiser's office. And if you go to Hillsborough County as an example, there's a list of properties that have had sinkhole claims. And then they actually tell you whether the property's been repaired or not as well. So you can look at the remediated sinkhole properties or the unremediated sinkhole properties. In addition, the seller's disclosure, when you buy a property, they are also required by law to disclose any known sinkhole activity on the property. The third possible source of information would be the Florida Geological Survey. Unfortunately, we don't have a statewide organization that tracks this. Sinkholes have been studied repeatedly, and a lot of these reports all say the same thing. We need to have an ongoing sinkhole database and research facility to monitor all this activity.
Kevin, you had a remark.
You know, 100% agree with him. I will say in Pasco County, our local ordinance has a small technicality loophole in it. In Pasco, we actually allow a structural stabilization to count for a sinkhole remediation. So you can go to the property appraiser's website, and once you zoom down to about the street level, you will start to see reds and yellows pop up on that property appraiser's website. Reds mean sinkhole activity unrepaired. Yellows mean either stabilization or a actual sinkhole remediation. And we have found, especially through this situation, both of those homes that went in first had structural stabilizations, not sinkhole remediations. So we're going to make a very distinct difference moving forward in our homes, and perhaps it's a new layer on our property appraiser's office, a new classification, probably the better word, that says that this is a structurally stabilized home, not an actual sinkhole remediated home.
Lori?
And I will say this is one of the areas that was really frustrating for us when we first started looking at this, is we started finding all these disparate data sets out there that were really hard to get to, and you know, you really had to know where to go to find information. A lot of these are what they call open data, so they are meant to be accessible, but they're really hard to find. And so one of the things that we started thinking about with our project online is to actually aggregate a lot of these different data sets and make them viable in a Google Earth kind of format, where people can just go and look at those other resources in a one-stop shop kind of thing. The other part I'll make clear in there is that when we started looking at this, nobody really keeps track of sinkholes, okay? They keep track of subsidence reports.
Right.
And there's a big difference. There can be, subsidence doesn't necessarily have to go on to become a sinkhole.
And that's just a sinking of
it's
the property?
It's just a depressional area. So it's really hard to start distinguishing or do anything. And now I understand why it's so hard to come up with sort of a predictability model, if you will, of these kinds of things, because the data sets are not put together in such a way where it's easy to harvest that kind of information.
I know it's very frustrating for people. They feel like the information isn't there, or it's not accessible, it's hard to find. Here's what we heard from one of our listeners.
My name is Sharon, and in fall 2011, I experienced a sinkhole at my Pinellas County home. Before I bought my home, I used the Pinellas County Property Appraiser's website to search the neighborhood looking for subsidence permits. Not finding any, I felt comfortable enough to buy. But less than a year in, stair step cracks started to appear in the walls of my home. I received a notice from a construction company stating they were starting sinkhole repairs on my neighbor's home. More and more cracks appeared in the terrazzo floor, every wall, and just about every ceiling. The initial Citizens Insurance Company inspector was very unprofessional and gave me the vibe of an unethical car mechanic. We promptly received a denial letter, even though we discussed the sinkhole of the neighboring property with the inspector while he was at our home. My husband and I tried to hire an attorney, but they wanted to know the value of our home before they would even talk to us. I assume they wanted to know how much they could earn before signing on to help. We felt defeated, caught in a system where no one wanted to help without making a profit from our misfortune. We eventually got a settlement check and were able to sell the house. I have looked into buying a home since, but have not been able to find an insurance company that offers sinkhole coverage in Pinellas County. I will not buy another house unless I can get sinkhole coverage.
Okay, I want to mention one more email that we got from a lawyer, Ted Corliss. He sort of backs up Sharon's experience. He says he represents property owners when insurers refuse to repair homes damaged by sinkhole activity. Ted Corliss blames the legislation passed in Florida in 2011 that limits what the insurance companies are liable for. And he says the issue now is that many people are losing value in their homes or are suffering from severe settlement damage caused by sinkholes but are being denied as a matter of course. This is especially true of Citizens Property Insurance. Ted goes on to say that Citizens Property Insurance routinely uses its resources and status as the state to deliberately deny claims using experts who are working solely with them and at their direction. Chuck Nice, I don't have anyone here from Citizens Property Insurance to defend them. I wanted to see if you could give us a little bit of their side of this issue.
Sure. If for full information, I've actually worked with Citizens in the past with some of their rate filings. But what I will tell you, if you go back to 2011, Citizens collected about $32 million in premiums to cover sinkholes in 2011, and they paid out over $500 million in losses for just sinkholes. Mm. And that was the predecessors to Senate Bill 408, which was a kind of a revamping of property casualty insurance in the state of Florida, especially with regard to sinkholes. I'll give you a little bit of background on the change to how insurance works now. If you buy a home in Florida and you buy homeowner's insurance, which is going to be required by a mortgage company, that policy will cover something called catastrophic ground cover collapse. And there are four components to that that must be met for there to be coverage. There has to be a sudden collapse of the ground cover. It has to be visible to the naked eye. You have to have structural damage to the main building on the property. And you have to have a government entity that says it's not safe to live there anymore. Back in 2011, when we saw these big uptake and big upswing in sinkhole claims, less than 1% of the claims at that time actually were for catastrophic ground cover collapse. 57% of them were what Kevin mentioned earlier and Lori was mentioning about subsidence. So insurance companies in the state of Florida today, they have to offer as optional coverage, sinkhole coverage. And that is again, something a little bit different than what used to be offered. In 2011, they changed the definition of structural damage. It's not just a visible crack anymore. So they gave very specific definitions of what structural damage is. And only the principal building has to be covered. So no detached garages, no pools, no screened-in porches. In addition, they've required now when you have sinkhole coverage that the money you collect from the insurance company must be used to repair the property, which was not the case previously. In fact, about 60% of the people that collected from their insurance company never did any repairs to their property.
Thank you, Chuck. I just wanted to clarify because Sharon said she was not able to get coverage in Pinellas County.
So there's the law and then there's the practical application of it. For a lot of areas in Sinkhole Alley, Citizens is the only game in town. They sell the optional sinkhole coverage and it is available, but it's expensive. You're probably going to spend anywhere from $1,000 to $2,500 per year for sinkhole coverage, in addition to what you're paying for your typical homeowner's policy.
Kevin had a comment on that amount.
Yeah. I actually tried to get sinkhole coverage on my home that I'm buying right now, and they were quoting me somewhere around the neighborhood of $8,000.
Was that Citizens or was that a private company?
I'm not exactly sure if it was a private company or Citizens, but when I went through my insurance agent to get that, mm-hmm. she says, you can't afford it. And I said, I still want it because I'm that guy on TV that is at the sinkhole. She got a quote for me and it was just over $8,000.
So, you know, private insurance companies are required to offer optional coverage. So what they've done is they price it very high and essentially it makes it unaffordable. Now, the good news is the number of claims have gone down drastically, but part of the reason is people are not buying the sinkhole coverage. So when it's not a catastrophic ground cover collapse, the house isn't completely destroyed, it's not unlivable, you don't have coverage from your standard homeowner's policy. So you know, a lot of people are, what we call it, going naked. The same thing with like flood coverage. Very few people buy flood insurance coverage. If you go to California, very few people buy earthquake coverage. They're going naked with the hopes that if it's a major event that the government's going to bail them out. The difference between an earthquake and sinkholes is sinkholes are very localized. The government's not going to step in and bail out one homeowner at a time with a sinkhole, where California is banking on the fact the federal government's not going to let millions of Californians have their houses destroyed and be, you know, homeless.
I think a very interesting statistic that all Floridians need to know is when FEMA steps in, number one, the state of Florida has to spend $29.6 million on that disaster before they can even approach the president for a federal declaration. In Pasco County, I had to spend $1.6 million of that 29.6. But the average FEMA payout for a homeowner in the state of Florida, should they meet qualifications, and there's a lot of them, is $6,000.
It could get your roof fixed in case of a hurricane, maybe, but for sinkhole damage, it doesn't sound like anything.
Absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, on a sinkhole, the likelihood that that localized disaster is going to apply for federal assistance is zero.
This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're talking about the dangers from sinkholes in our area. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're discussing sinkholes with Kevin Guthrie, Assistant Pasco County Administrator for Public Safety, Dr. Lori Collins, the co-director of the University of South Florida Library's Digital Heritage and Humanities Collections, and from the studios of WFSU in Tallahassee, Dr. Chuck Nice, Assistant Professor of Risk Management and Insurance at Florida State University. You know, we were talking about the fact that it's worrisome if your neighbor had developed a sinkhole or subsidence. Here's what one listener told us.
My name is Avtar, and I'm from Tampa. My next-door neighbor had sinkhole activity 10 years ago where they had to put grout in the soil and they had to repair their floors and walls. To alleviate possible problems with my house, we have been using gutters and long downspouts. We also make sure to water the lawns during the drought seasons. I also check for windows and doors opening and closing properly and for any unusual movements in the fences and depressions in the ground. What else can a homeowner do to avoid and predict sinkholes? Are there any low-cost sensors in the market as opposed to soil tests that cost thousands of dollars?
Well, he's obviously worried because his neighbor had sinkhole activity that affected their house. Is he right to be worried? Lori?
I think so.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, one of the things that was kind of shocking, I guess, to me in this project.
Your project studying the Pasco sinkhole.
Yeah. So we pulled open data sources for our online mapping tool, and there were three reported subsidence reports that were nearby. Well, then I start talking to community folks and going around as part of this project, and I've now accumulated another 8, and I'm sure there's more, reports that were done for individual homeowners on their homes that they had ground penetrating radar and insurance filings, but they didn't appear in the open data set that we were looking at. So now there's another at least 8 homes right on that same road around the corner, okay? And this is alarming in the sense that I'm looking at these data sources and I'm not finding these, or at least not easily finding these. Right. So I can't imagine the frustration of a homeowner trying to feel informed when they're doing these purchases of a large, you know, mortgage. Yeah. And I think it's wonderful that homeowners are trying to do their part, but I think also developers have a role in this, even with the statutes and things that we have on the books today. Appropriateness of where people are developing and how they're developing. You know, maybe you can speak to this, Kevin, as far as the county level.
I tell you, it's a tough spot to be in. You know, as I mentioned earlier, Pasco County doesn't have a geotechnical engineer. So we do our due diligence. We do the best we can with what we have. But, you know, the county doesn't go out and do ground penetrating radar on every parcel that comes in as a part of a future land use map.
And Otar wanted to do this himself. He asked about some kind of low-cost sensors where he would know. Does that exist?
No. And unfortunately, you know, in my past life, I was actually the Development of Regional Impact Coordinator for the Department of Environmental Protection. So I dealt with a lot of these developments that have a threshold that they, you know, are doing.
Developments of regional impact.
Right.
Large-scale developments.
Mm-hmm. And as Kevin's saying, the geotechnical part of that is largely
absent.
Absent, or under, you know, they do have requirements that they have to do, but there's a lot of, you know, I fill this area of wetlands and then I'm creating a wetland to mitigate the fact that I did that. But it's the big picture, right? It's one thing if they're large developments and they have these extra requirements, but how about these smaller developments? Or how about the fact that you've got development right next to another development, right next to another development? And it's all of that that are having impacts on our landscape. And so I think that there has to be some look in a holistic way. And maybe the scale is at the county level. Maybe the partnership needs to be at the county level to make it appropriate enough that we can understand these processes that are happening that are not visible, that are under the ground, and that we can maybe build more suitably. This particular incident happened in a development that was from the 1960s, prior to a lot of the rules and the statutes that we currently have. But I think the indicators were there that this is a likely occurrence.
Are you talking about the sinkhole
in Lake Pageant? The indicators are there. We could have said, you know, this is a likely area in a much more strong way, I think.
Otar wanted to know if there was anything more he could do. Chuck Nice, is sinkhole insurance something that he should definitely invest in?
My short answer to that is yes. A little bit longer answer. One of the things that I think is concerning with this, before we go into someone who's already living there, someone who's looking to move into an area, the seller's incentive is not to reveal negative information, right? Because that hurts their bottom line. Counties want people to move in, and they want higher property values because that affects their tax base. They don't want that negative information out there. Realtors, you know, they get a commission. They don't want that negative information out there. One of the ways that a potential buyer can find out about this is insurance rates. Call an insurance company. How much is sinkhole coverage going to be on this property? Insurance companies have a real incentive to gather all the information they can. They're the ones who are going to pay losses when it happens. So you can use your insurance premiums as a signal to the risk that that particular property presents. But once you're in, is sinkhole insurance worth it? And everybody looks at insurance and says, it's a waste of money. It's a negative cash flow, right? You spend this money every year. What do I get for it? And what you get for it is protection when that large loss occurs. Earlier, we were talking about citizens, and you talked about the lawyer Corliss saying that they don't pay claims and they just deny. Citizens has agreed that if they hire an expert and the policyholder hires an expert, it can go to a third party for arbitration. And they've agreed to abide by that third party decision, even though that's not part of their policy. So they are clearing the backlog of lawsuits right now. Citizens have been doing this for the last couple of years. But fraud has been an issue in sinkhole coverage. I mean, you say that there's every 10 days they're looking, come out to look at a subsidence, but Citizens had 18,000 sinkhole claims in the state of Florida. And Citizens is not the only insurance company. So you're looking at thousands, maybe close to 100,000 sinkhole claims in the state of Florida since the mid-2000s. That's not one every 10 days. That's far more than that.
Wow.
So you're looking at a lot of fraud that drove the changes that we saw in 2011. Now, the question becomes, did those changes go too far? And now, do you have cases where people have a legitimate claim, but they don't meet the structural damage definition?
The pendulum. What they're saying. The pendulum swung too far in the other direction.
It probably did. What you have now is, instead of all the fraud, you're going to have people who have smaller homes who probably can't afford to get a lawyer because the lawyer is going to say, well, there's not enough in it for me. And they're going to get their claim denied. And it's going to be hard for them because they're going to suffer a loss. And it's going to be a loss to a significant portion of their home. And insurance is not going to be there for them. It probably did go too far the other way.
Lori?
I was really surprised, I guess, when I saw the pins, the underpinnings of the house that went in.
The house that fell into the sinkhole in Land O'Lakes?
Right. It had been remediated. And then that family basically had vacated it and was using it for an income property after they remediated. And the same thing with the other one. It had had a study and everything and found to be a sinkhole home. And then they were letting people live in it and rent it.
But they had what they thought stabilized it.
Yep,
an engineer had told them it was stable.
Right.
Well, no. Well, so an engineer did not tell them it was stable. An engineer produced a report to the Pasco County Board of County Commission building official and said, this is what we recommend for remediation, which was grout and pins for about a total of $130,000 per home. That homeowner couldn't afford it, so they said, get with local company, what can you do for me? And they said, well, we can structurally stabilize it for $30,000 and just put pins in it. Okay, I can afford that, do that. And then that's where that loophole in Pasco County comes in, is a structural stabilization in Pasco County is the same thing as a sinkhole remediation. That is not the case. So they didn't produce an engineer's report that said it is fixed. They had a person come in and say, I stabilized it.
I don't see what they could have done, though. I mean, that sinkhole's 50 feet deep and 250 feet wide. What could they have done to make that house safe? That would have been $130,000 down the drain, as far as I can see.
I'm not an engineer and I'm not a scientist, but I can tell you we have a lot of sinkholes that have been grouted in Pasco County. Those sinkholes have not opened back
up. Okay, but look at this one.
Right. We've been given...
There was no grout.
There was no grout, so we really can't make that assessment. Had they done grout back then?
What does that mean?
We're basically living on Swiss cheese. So think of a big hunk of Swiss cheese, and you're basically using a material to fill those holes in the Swiss cheese so that it doesn't have the potential for that collapse event.
So they're changing the...
And that would have been right underneath his house.
Right.
And the one next door.
I mean, if they had both done this...
They both had reports that indicated that these things were going on. And then... I guess my whole point of it was I just feel really bad for the people that were actually renting. It was very hard to go out there and see those belongings all over the top of the water like that.
You saw it.
Yeah. And to know that those were renters and they had just lost everything and they had no renter insurance, from my understanding.
And this is something we're looking at in Pasco County as potentially even bringing forth some legislation, because right now landlords have to tell them and declare that it's a flood zone, it's an evacuation zone, things like that. But we cannot clearly define that a landlord must declare to a renter that it is a sinkhole property. And we want that in statute. We want it put into the rental agreements, that checkbox, this is or is not a sinkhole remediated property or non-sinkhole remediated property, so that those renters know going in. Back to Dr. Nice, my risk just went up. Do I need to get renter's insurance? Because realistically, the renter's insurance, very low cost, because you're just protecting the contents of the home, not necessarily the structural home itself.
That is Kevin Guthrie, Assistant Pasco County Administrator for Public Safety. Dr. Lori Collins, Co-Director of the University of South Florida Libraries Digital Heritage and Humanities Collections. And Dr. Chuck Nice, Assistant Professor of Risk Management and Insurance at Florida State University. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're always interested in what you have to say. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, at Florida Matters, or email us at floridamatters@wusf.org. Florida Matters is produced by Stephanie Colombini. The engineer is Craig George. Our show is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.